Witches, wizards, and warlocks, welcome to my talk on manipulating time with GDB. Well, that's what I would have said if it wasn't for the RR talk that came right before me that taught everything that you're supposed to know or that I was going to say. So instead, let's talk about how you can help us make manipulating time with GDB even better, right? So let me give a quick summary of what I'm going to be talking about. First, some introduction in case you didn't catch the previous talk, in case you didn't, you have no idea you were sleeping in the talk or something. I don't know how you would. It was a pretty good talk. I'm then going to go into the technical details of how it works. And as I explain how each little bit is working, I'll also explain to you why this little bit might be buggy. And then I'll give you a couple links, a couple QR codes to where you can see the list of bugs that we have open. And then you can pick your favorite. And I'll give you a little request to help us fix them and some contact information if you're not comfortable just throwing an email to the void of the mailing list and you would like to talk to someone who you think is a person. Right. So let's go from the start. What the hell am I talking about? Or first, who am I? Hello. I'm Guinevere. I've been hired by Red Hat to work on GDB. I've been doing it for almost 3 years, and just recently I've been appointed one of the maintainers for GDB for one of the specific areas that does reverse debugging in GDB. And one of the things that I like to do is help people get into contributing to open source. I always wanted to contribute to open source when I was in university, but it always felt like an impossible task. I would need to be like some sort of genius to do it. And then as I started doing it professionally, I realized that there are some people who aren't geniuses like me who are doing it, and I wanted to spread that around. What is this GDB that I keep mentioning? In case you don't know, GDB is a very famous debugger for C, C++. It's been around for like 30-something years, not sure how many, more than 30. But yeah, it is basically, if you're a time wizard, it's your best friend. It can slow down your program, it can stop it altogether, and as you just learned, it can also make it run backwards. I call it time travel debugging because it's much more fun than reverse debugging, let's be honest. It lets you undo instructions and full statements and even maybe sometimes go to the very start of the program. And it's very useful for a wide range of things, from race conditions to just logical problems to just understanding the code that you don't understand. All of this was mentioned in the previous talk. If you didn't manage to catch it, I'll give a quick run over, and then you can use what I teach here to go back in time and see the previous talk. So, since a lot of people were here in the previous talk, not many of you will be asking. Many of you might be asking, how is that possible? Not many of you would be saying that's impossible, which was my joke. So I'm just going to go and explain, like, how is this possible? Because CPU is not meant to execute backwards. It doesn't have a way to just, you know, undo things. So let's go with a simple instruction. This is an x86 instruction, just adding one to a region of memory. And this one sounds like it would be very easy to undo, right? You just need to subtract one from the memory. You can do it arithmetically. Sounds like it. It's not quite that easy, because whenever you use the arithmetic unit in the x86 CPU, it overwrites some stuff, so you cannot just undo things logically. The best way to do it is to instead just remember, hey, I'm looking at this address of memory. It is this long, and it has this value. And then you save that in your program. But as I said, this is the arithmetic unit, so we also need to know the flags that were there before, because it's going to get overwritten. And every single instruction that happens will also increment the instruction pointer or the program counter. I use those interchangeably here. So we need to remember that. And if you basically created this in your program, inside your program, and then you added some markers here and there to say, like, OK, between these ends is a single instruction, then you get exactly what GDB record pool does. This is the area that I'm most familiar with, and it's the area that I maintain. It does exactly what I showed you and nothing more. So there are good things and bad things about using this version. A good thing is that it just comes with GDB. You don't need any extra things. It can fully reconstruct the program state to any previous state. It's not something that every single way to do it can do. But the bad thing is that it is really, really slow. If you think that the twice as slow thing that was mentioned in the RR is bad, try, 20 or 40 times or even more. I never stopped to test how long it is. It's just unusably slow at this point. But it's really nice. We should make that better. And it's a little harder to support because we need to teach GDB every single instruction that we want to support for every single architecture. There's nothing that says only works in these architectures or that, other than people putting their time into teaching the GDB disassembler. And as you can see, there are a lot of as you can imagine, there are a lot of possible things that can go wrong. One of the things, like I said, we need to teach every single instruction to the disassembler. This is a QR code for a couple bugs that have been filed for missing instruction for this, missing instruction for that, missing instruction for this architecture. And also, if you like, making code neater, if you enjoy making it more readable, the disassembly code for x86 is a complete mess. There's a single function with over 3,000 lines and unreadable other functions and members that are just a single letter. Please help. But that is just a single way to do it and a very small example. So let's look at a little bit of a longer one. Let's say you have an instruction here at this program counter. And then your program goes into this program, into this instruction, and this instruction, which so you can see that this was a jump, and then it continues executing everything. You can see exactly where your program went through, right? If we saved exactly this information, and just a couple bits more, like how long each instruction is, what kind of instruction it is, and everything, we could have a very good idea of what path your code your program took through the code, and we could maybe not recreate everything, but we can understand, like, hey, the bug is happening because there's some logic wrong at this point, which is making us take a wrong if somewhere, right? This is also in GDB, is the B-trace recording. This relies on a feature of x86, I think Intel only, but don't quote me on that, which saves the whole path in a region of memory called the BTS, and then whenever the inferior, which is the program that you're debugging, is stopped, GDB looks at that region of area and does all that information of, like, hey, it's this big and it was this kind of instruction. It is, again, good because it's in a single tool, and compared to the other version, it's pretty fast. I don't think there's any big slowdowns, maybe like 2x or 3x, which when we're talking about recording the whole execution is kind of all right. But like as I said, you cannot reconstruct everything, and it's hardware dependent, and it needs to be in the hardware. It's not like we can do anything to improve that. It has a couple issues with test suite regressions. You hit some assertion errors, and there's some usability problems with, like, not being very clear when you can or cannot do something. But it's not an area that I looked much more than what I needed to make this talk, so I'm not familiar with the problems. If anyone found it interesting, we can still chat. And well, I've been talking about, looking at each instruction at a time, and you have this kind of execution style. What if you had you made like a whole checkpoint, everything that's happening in your system at the very start of the program, and then you keep going, and then when you reach a certain point, you create a new checkpoint. So then you can fully recreate whatever is happening at an earlier stage, and you can keep going, right? You cannot step a single instruction back, but you can step a lot and go forward some. This is what RR does. And this is why I got confused when we didn't say there was a live inferior, because no, it has to have a live inferior. You create a checkpoint, you go forward, you create a checkpoint, move back, and step forward. At least this is how I think RR works. And there's also a tool called UDB, which I've been told does that. It is proprietary. I have no idea how that works, and I'm not all that interested in it. But yeah, and then what RR does, as you have all seen, is it creates a way for GDB to control the inferior. Yeah, it does that by creating a GDB server. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. But yeah, so those are the three main ways that I know of doing reverse debugging now. But once we recorded the thing, how do we use it? Using the GDB front end, which is the part that handles your commands and everything, you can do it two ways. Using reverse next, reverse step, and all those commands that were explained in the RR talk. Or you can actually just say to GDB, hey, I'm going to be going backwards using setExecutionDirect reverse, and then just say next step or whatever, and it's going to understand what you want. Because actually, behind the scenes, if you say reverse next, it is just doing that, setting it to the reverse, and then executing the instruction, and then starting back forward. So it does exactly the same thing. And when we handle the command, we try to make use of as much information as possible for going forward, as much of the logic as possible. And only when we know, okay, this part has to be different when we're going backwards, then we add a specific case like, okay, if going backwards and blah, 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 then do this. And, you know, when we're doing that and assuming that everything works until proven otherwise, what could possibly be buggy, right? Right. And RR, like I said, it does a very smart thing. It tries to not do as little as possible. It just creates a GDB server which can control the inferior, the program that you're debugging, and just that. And then it's going to open a GDB server and accept commands from your GDB, from another client, another GDB somewhere. And everything of command handling and understanding and saying, okay, we're going to move this many instructions or whatever, that's all handled by GDB. All RR does is reset the information on the program. So yeah, what could possibly go wrong with this kind of setup, right? So many things. The fact that there had to be two whole talks explaining why this feature is nice and it exists should tell you that this is not a very well-known feature. It's not something that you see many people using. And yet, there are over 30 bugs filed for it. In a feature that no one's using, that's kind of crazy to me. Because, you know, if people were using, that would be just so many more. And along with people with things actually going wrong, there's also confusing things and just user experience problems. So let's go over a couple of them. A command that's very, very useful if you're very used to GDB is the command until. You can tell it to go until a loop ends, for instance. It just does not work in reverse mode. Or, well, if you say reverse until, it just does not work. If you're setting the execution to reverse, it works, just wrong. So, yeah. And there are some commands, for instance, record instruction history and function call history. These sound like it should work for all recording features, right? But yeah, no, they're only available for Btrace, and there's no way to tell as a user. There's nothing in the help text. There's nothing in the name of the command. There's not bug open for it, but there's a Stack Overflow question asking why. So yeah, that is part of the UX problem. And another UX problem. If you're used to GDB, ignore the last 30 seconds. But if you're not, at the start here, this is the GDB session that says we are right before executing right before calling the function setup. So when you're going forward and you say step, you want to step into the function setup. What this execution log is showing is that if you say reverse step, you do not step into the setup function. You step through the previous line that was not printed. Because yes, that makes much sense. It's something that we've talked about in the mailing list before. It's not a trivial problem to solve, but it is a real problem. And there's another problem here in this very execution log. I say continue to move forward. And then GDB says no more execution history. And my very scientific testing of asking one friend has revealed that this makes it sound like you cannot execute forward anymore and you have to start again. You can. It's not going to be simulating. It's going to be running. So from audience reaction, I think more people were confused by this. We have a couple of user experience problems. And if you like a challenge, if you don't want something easy to start, we have really hard issues. We have problem with multiple inferiors, because GDB can open multiple programs to be debugged, and there's no way for the recording to know which program is being recorded, actually. And there's lots of problems with handling signals and things like that, because this was introduced before GDB could do that, so no one ever looked back. GDB recording itself has a problem with multi-threading programs, because I showed you all the information, the memory, the region of memory, and the value. Where do I put the thread information there? Yeah, we don't record multi-threaded stuff. So that's one reason to use RR. until we fix that. So please help us fix that. I want people to use GDB. And as I said at the start, it is just unusably slow. We need some profiling to be done. We need to figure out why is it so slow and figure out how it can be faster so that, you know, it can be more used and people can find more bugs for me to continue working. And then the question that some people might be asking is, like, where do I come in? Why am I giving you the talk? I said at the start that I like reverse debugging and I like getting people interested. So if I said anything here that sounds like an interesting problem or an interesting thing that you would like to see how it works and how it can get fixed, just hit me up and we'll chat and see where it goes. Does anyone have any more questions that I haven't answered yet? Okay. Yeah.
In the previous talk, it was supposed to enable some flag of the kernel, something like ternary or something. Would you know why is it necessary? Why in the internals error needs this flag to get the?
Yeah, and also I said it was because of a security reason, and I don't know if the person who asked that. Oh yeah, he's still here. Right. So the reason we need the perf flag is because, as far as I understand it, again, I didn't look at RR, but as far as I understand it, whenever a perf event happens, we get the checkpoint. So if a perf event would happen, we dump everything. And I think, yeah, so if you need that flag to read into perf events and get that kind of internal information of another program, you would need that for RR as well.
So a counter question. So do you know, can you provide some examples of perf events? When does it happen?
I'm sorry, I can't, because again, it's not my area. I look at the disassembler stuff. Sorry. I think you were first.
So, as I understand, I may be confused, but you record whenever there is writing on off memory.
No, when perf events happen.
No, I'm not talking about. I'm talking about the GDB.
It records every instruction.
Yeah, every instruction. But for reverse
execution, yeah.
Do read watch point work or is it?
So the question is, can you use watch points even with GDB recording? And the answer is yes. You can. Most of GDB has no idea that a recording has happened. We sort of like separate what is handling commands, what is dealing with threads, what is dealing with the CPU itself. And somewhere along that stack, there is the part that goes, oh, wait, you're trying to execute in reverse. I'm not going to send that to the CPU. I'm going to do it myself. And that facility has no information about like watch points and everything. And conversely, the watch point stuff has no idea that that's happening. It just will check later if that has happened. So yeah, everything that works forward works backwards, except for changing the state of your program, because we're simulating based on what happened before. I think there was a question. Yeah.
How does it work with system calls? Does it mock them somehow, or is it able to record kernel space or something like that?
I'm sorry, I don't know. I've never tried seeing what happens.
You won't be able to record the kernel space because whenever you execute step instruction over a syscall instruction, you are never stepping into the kernel space. If you want to debug the kernel space, you need to basically debug the Linux kernel throughout QEMU, for example. Then
yeah.
You can actually debug both the user space and kernel space, but otherwise, no.
So it's not going to be able to handle like the side effects of a syscall, but it knows that a syscall has happened and does everything else, basically, I think. I think Mark was first.
Yeah, so the multi-threaded case, can that ever work?
Yes, I have a couple of ideas how. You can have, basically, like multiple separate histories, one for each thread, or you could have an extra field for each thing that says this is for thread X or for thread Y, or you can order things to like a single instruction per thread. There are a couple ways that I have not tested at all, and I don't know if any of them will work, but I don't see a reason, like a theoretical reason why it would just be impossible.
The thing is, one thing is the the history, your log, what do we record. The other thing is that we would need to serialize execution also, because if you have two threads
if you serialize
doing things,
it
you don't know which one changed memory. So how could you know if it was thread, you know, two threads are just poking at memory, changing memory. How would you know which one it was? How would you know which instruction caused the side effect that you're seeing? So we need to serialize, meaning the way this works is basically single step instruction. So we need like single step thread one, and then
single step
that, and then single step thread two, record that. You know, do a round robin thing.
Yeah, which would make actually. Yeah, it would be even slower, but it would make race conditions more likely. So maybe it's a good thing. I don't know.
And then you cannot step back in a stop mode, for example.
Yeah, this is a complex issue. If you want a challenge, let's talk on the mail list.
You would need to provide guarantees about follow-up progress and everything. That's a real mess.
Let's talk on the mail list. It's a little complicated for right now. Sorry.
Where you were trying to find a race condition, then if you know what thread is using what memory, and you know that because you recorded that, then you can tell the user, hey, these threads are at that time competing for the same thing.
Yes.
The thing is, you also need to track all the mutexes and stuff like that, because if you don't, then you don't know if they are really race conditioning or not.
Okay, so I'm just gonna repeat in case anyone's watching from afar. The question or comment is saying that if we know all the threads that are trying to access the memory at the same time, we can tell the user that a race condition is happening. And in theory, yes, if we keep track of the mutexes and everything. But the problem, again, the recording part is very far away from everything else from GDB. So unless you manage to do this recording, and then later you also create a command that does that kind of querying into the data, there's no easy way to get that information available to the user. We're not set up to get this kind of low-level stuff right out easily. Yeah?
I have a question. It's not a thread-based question. Don't
worry. Oh, thank you.
But actually, I work a lot with microcontrollers, and for example, with flash memory, 4 megabytes of flash memory, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering whether how hard would it be to make also GDB time traveling work on such microcontrollers? I guess the memory space is kind of an issue.
Yeah. First off, if you're debugging GDB in the microcontroller itself, which I don't think it would be because GDB is big, then memory becomes an issue. If you're not, I don't know if GDB server is set up to do that. And if it were, it would make the same memory issue. So we would need a facility to get the disassembling information into GDB itself and then send it back to the GDB server.
The problem is because you have scalability.
Yeah.
And then you have distribution and you need to.
So yeah, that's a complex use case.
This backend, the call it
recordful,
this is all inside GDB. So if you're remote debugging, you don't need to teach the server anything at all. It's all being recorded on the GDB side.
Oh really?
If you want, yeah.
Huh.
So you can use Linux GDB server with this, and it works.
Okay, I'm surprised.
It's open OCD maybe in this case,
yeah.
But you need some kind of.
So what you need is to teach GDB's reverse debugging engine about that instruction set, because this only supports x86.
And I think it does ARM and something power or S390. There are a couple architectures that are partially supported. You need to basically create your own disassembler from scratch, unfortunately. Yeah, there is a disassembly engine inside GDB, but it only creates text. And I tried to backport it, but so right now you create your own disassembly from scratch. It's easier. Oh, yeah, sorry, we're out of time. So we can talk more at the hallway track, or probably tomorrow, because I'm going to be managing everything. But thank you for coming, and I promised. If anyone would like to contact me, these are my contact information. Thank you.